It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin. Featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative and explore whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect us all, both locally and globally. And for this, the Arts Hour, I interview local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways that we engage with the world. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. You can hear podcasts of all my past shows there, and you can connect with me on social media, should you so wish, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. So again, the show website is itsaquestionofbalance.com. Well, this week, as my special guest from the arts, I'm pleased to be interviewing film director, producer and writer Chris Shorman and award-winning actor and producer Andrew Jenkins. Their latest project together is the feature film Lost Solace, a psychological thriller which was an official selection at the 2016 Cinequest Film Festival and Fright Fest London. Born and raised in the oil towns of southern Alberta, Canada, Chris Shorman's passion for film started early. He knew he wanted to make films as a young child and only graduated high school because he was allowed school credit for the short films he made. He began interning on films shooting in Calgary, shadowing directors such as Walter Hill, Alan Moyle and Rod Lurie. Following graduation from the film video course at the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology in 2005, Chris directed the short film Cornered, which premiered at the 2007 Edmonton International Film Festival. The next year, he wrote and directed the feature film Hope for the Broken Contender. Self-funded for a mere $6,000 that he saved while working in the oil patch, Hope for the Broken Contender premiered on opening night at the 2008 Calgary International Film Festival to a sold-out audience and won the People's Choice Award. The film went on to earn two nominations at the Alberta Film and Television Awards for Best Screenplay and Best Cinematography. The idea for Chris's latest film, Lost Solace, which had its world premiere in 2016 and which Chris wrote and directed, was born from the process of Chris battling and overcoming a debilitating panic disorder, which made him appreciate how the mind is plastic and how people have the potential to change. Chris continues to develop screenplays which detail his love of character and his desire to explore our fragile human condition through unique and accessible stories. Andrew Jenkins is an award-winning actor and native of Alberta, Canada. He holds a degree from the University of British Columbia and trained with William Esper at the Esper Studio in New York City. Andrew has appeared on stage as well as in numerous film and television roles. One of Andrew's first roles was working with Oscar-winning actress Holly Hunter in Saving Grace. He then went on to play the lead in Canadian-Australian production of Stormworld, an action-adventure series for Canada's CTV Space Channel, ABC TV, Disney Channel Australia, and Australia's Nine Network. Andrew's work on screen has earned him accolades spanning for a nomination for Canada's prestigious Leo Award for his performance in Stormworld, as well as several nominations for the Young Artist Awards, including a win for his recurring guest spot on Tower Prep. Among other roles, Andrew has appeared in a recurring guest spot on Wayward Pines, working alongside Oscar nominee Matt Dillon, as the love interest of Mireille Enos in the hit show Supernatural, and as Sir Percival in the award-winning TV show Once Upon a Time. Andrew plays the lead role in the feature film Lost Solace, the story of which he helped develop, and he also works as a writer and producer and has several projects in development. Well, welcome to the show, Chris.
Hi there.
And welcome to the show, Andrew.
Hey, Ruth, that was a lovely introduction. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Well, both of you have very interesting careers, so it was easy. Both of your lives are embedded in your artistic work, and I wanted to ask you, I'm wondering if you can remember the very first time that art of any kind had a deep effect on you, when you realised perhaps that art had a power beyond just entertainment. Maybe you, Chris, first.
Well, I think I can speak more so to the impact. For me, it was certainly cinema to begin with. My mom, as well, was a librarian and brought home a lot of stories. So right from the get-go, we were raised on story. But I do remember at one point she brought home a behind-the-scenes book, and I think it was for Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Uh-huh.
And there was just images of filmmaking and the camera and people behind the scenes, and then I'd never quite seen anything like that before, and it just totally, something felt right about that, especially, you know, considering how much I was sort of swept by story and cinema in particular. So it was very early on. That was like 4 or 5 years old.
Right.
And that's my earliest memory of sort of feeling some sort of affinity for cinema and the art form of it.
Right.
The creation of it.
Yeah. Interesting. What about you, Andrew?
Well, you know, the affinity for cinema when I was a young guy, you know, that resonates with what Chris said. I remember being swept away by, you know, the make-believe. I'd watch old Westerns. I was a big Star Wars fan. But, you know, there's a moment that sticks out. I was a bit older. I was about 15. And it's that film Mystic River, and there's a moment in it, which is kind of like a flashbulb moment for me. It's when Sean Penn realizes that his daughter could, you know, I don't want to give any spoilers, but it's a pretty old film, that his daughter could be dead, and he kind of unleashes all of the emotion that's going on inside of him. And, you know, I was only 15. I had no idea, what it was like to have a child or to, you know, lose a child, but there was something
right
about his performance that made me feel like this crazy, icky, emotional feeling in my stomach, and, it was an experience that I had never had, but I kind of understood it. I understood how he was relating to it, and it sort of, you know, led me down this rabbit hole into, you know, wanting to be a performer.
Right. And you mentioned your mother was a librarian, Chris. I was wondering, did you grow up in a creative environment, would you say?
Actually, yes. My father was an artist. He worked in the oil patch, but he had gone to art school. And I remember, you know, again, from very early on, both my parents were very supportive of us doing whatever we could dream of. I remember my mom telling us from very early on, spread your wings and fly. And my dad's art was, oh my goodness, so impactful on us, the way he would render realistic landscapes with the pen, and he had such an eye for it. And certainly, I can say visually, my visual gene, so to speak, comes from him. And then my mom, too, like her love of storytelling, and then, oh my goodness, she's such an empath. And I think cinema is a way in. Like Andrew was just saying about, you know, getting into characters and people. I think cinema is one of the most powerful ways as sort of an empathy building device.
Right.
You know, yes, I feel I did grow up in a creative environment, although the world that I was subjected in, it just sort of treats it funny. It treats it like it's not a real job, you know, despite it being fun. So I until high school, I didn't really have or know that there was a way that I could do this with my life, you know?
Right, yeah. What about you, Andrew? Would you say you grew up in a creative environment, or did you have to find art for yourself?
I grew up in a creative environment. I grew up with musicians in the family, and so we were always encouraged to be creative. It was usually my channel growing up was usually through music, and I'd always sit in front of the TV and, like I say, watch performers play make-believe, and there was something always about it, but I didn't, you know, find the medium as an actor until a little bit later on in life.
Right, yeah. I'd like to talk to each of you individually for a bit and then go back to talking to both of you. So, Chris, I'll start with you. You've said in an interview for Fright Fest that you wanted to make films from the age of 4. I'm curious what that looks like from a young child's perspective at that young age, and as you grew, what did it mean to you to make a film?
It's amazing. I can't quite describe it, but something about playing with my action figures and the angles that I was watching them from, and being so impacted by the movies I was in love with. And back then, I mean, it was Back to the Future and Star Wars and Indiana Jones and a lot of the Spielberg Lucas stuff was certainly stuff I grew up on more so than anything else.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Something about immersing yourself into getting lost in a world. You know, I had a very hyperactive imagination. Mm. I found myself wandering, you know, into the wilderness or during school classes and whatnot, just imagining being somewhere else. And like I said, it wasn't until I saw a behind-the-scenes book that I realized that it was something that you can actually create and capture.
Mm. That's quite an evocative image with the little figures that you were talking about, because of course, you know, with film you have the story, but then you also have how you tell it, and there's two elements, aren't there, of just absorbing the story and then thinking about, oh well, how did they tell that story, by putting the person here and the camera there and all of that. So I could see how the little action figures could start that process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for sure.
What attracted you to writing and directing instead of, say, acting?
Interesting. Funny, when I was 9, our family got the first camera, and of course we were all over that, me and my brother.
Uh-huh.
We made a lot of movies together growing up, but every time my cousins or friends would come over, they kind of got pulled into making a film for me, and which you find out really early on that it takes way longer than what you expected it to. So we would be shooting all hours of the night to try to get a movie made by the time they went home. And I remember I actually wanted to act in it, but every time I put the camera in the hands of anyone else who'd never really held a camera before, I wasn't happy with the image. So what I started doing was, okay, you know what, I'll just shoot it. And I just got behind the camera so often, so much, that I kind of just found my place. And, you know, again, as I grew up, I just learned more about, you know, the director being the storyteller. And then I always was a good writer, too. I wasn't very good in school. I wasn't very good academic, but I was always good at English. And I was always, I think, I had an aptitude for storytelling. And just an example of the aptitude. It's like I got like a 96% on my written English diploma in grade 12 and a 30-something percent on the multiple choice. And I actually asked my teacher what that was about, and he actually told me, he's like, well, you're an artist. You want to find your own answer. You don't want to pick someone else's answer. And that was, I don't know. I was very fortunate to find my way in.
Yes. Yeah, that's interesting. You know? And now, what is your process for writing a script now, from first coming up with an idea to kind of getting it finished?
It's different for every single project. I tend to take my time. I don't quite know where they come from, but there's just impressions and images in my mind from memory or dream or something. I journal every day. I journal a lot.
Oh, interesting.
And there's just things. And this, again, it's just something that happened very early on, where there would just be something, a scene or a moment. And my way in is actually listening to music and putting on, you know, my iPod, and I tend to go for walks and bike and just ruminate and stew on these images and ideas. And honestly, if I do that long enough, a story tends to emerge, and it connects different images that I've had in the past. And so for me, it's very organic. I don't sit down and just outline something from beginning to end. It's just sort of all these impressions that I then slowly start to stitch together in my mind before I start writing anything.
Right.
And it usually comes from imagery. It starts with imagery.
Right. Yeah.
For the writing. So, and then the writing, it's that impression, and then finding, like, when you start applying character and dialogue, it's literally, I have to think of someone that I know or a situation that I've been in. It's a very personal place I tend to come from when I write. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, director, producer and writer Chris Shorman, and award-winning actor and producer Andrew Jenkins. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back with more conversation after these messages. Mark's Art Party is the largest and wildest arts festival in the Bay Area, running September 24th through October 1st at Santa Clara County Fairgrounds. With 34,000 square feet of gallery space, music, dance, art cars, food trucks, fire, fashion and film, described as Burning Man in a tux, it's like nothing you've ever experienced before, and it benefits Silicon Valley Creates. Express yourself. The largest, most diverse art event the Bay Area has ever seen. This year's theme is Alice in Wonderland through the Looking Glass. You're more than just a viewer, you become a participant. Come along to Ann and Mark's Art Party September 24th through October 1st at Santa Clara County Fairgrounds. For more information, visit artpartysj.com. Artpartysj.com. That's artpartysj.com. Express yourself.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Bookshop Santa Cruz is celebrating 50 years of independent bookselling in the community that we love. Visit Bookshop Santa Cruz downtown and join in the festivities as we celebrate our customers and the books that make it all possible. Bookshop Santa Cruz, celebrating an amazing 50 years in downtown Santa Cruz.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel, and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest this week, director, producer and writer Chris Shorman, and award-winning actor and producer Andrew Jenkins, whose latest project together is the feature film Lost Solace, which we'll be talking about a bit later. And if you're interested in that, you can go to their website, lostsolacefilm.com. Before the break, we were talking to Chris, and now I'd like to talk to you, Andrew. I'm wondering what attracted you to acting as your artistic focus. I was asking Chris, you know, why he was a director. You know, how did you begin, and what made you want to be an actor?
That's a good question. I mean, it goes back to the previous question, where, you know, at first I think I was just really taken by, you know, being able to play make-believe for a living, and it started that way. And you know, I started to get some theater training, and it kind of sent me down this rabbit hole of, you know, how to really tell stories in a truthful way, to come from a personal place. And I guess my craft has sort of evolved over the last 10 years that I've been doing it. And yeah.
Acting's unique because you're creating art by communicating someone else's artistic vision, usually, unless you've written the work yourself. I'm wondering if you feel a responsibility to sort of understand their vision and convey it, and how you approach that.
I think that there's a tremendous amount of responsibility to the story, to the people whose story you're telling. I suppose it's like the moment that I mentioned in Mystic River, you know, you may never have had an experience like that, but you have to find it either in yourself or in the given circumstances. There are different ways of going about it. But yes, there's a tremendous amount of responsibility, and to the audience as well, when you're telling any story, whether it be in the theater or, you know, in front of a camera.
Right. And I wanted to also ask you, the world of acting is highly competitive, especially in Hollywood. It's very hard to succeed, and it involves almost continuous self-promotion. I'm wondering how you keep your sense of your true self and what you want from life in such a challenging environment. You know, don't start sort of believing your own PR, as it were.
Yeah, it is very challenging. And it is, every a couple of years, somebody asked me, you know, for advice, and they say, I'm going to try it for a year. And I always just kind of think, man, you can't, it's not something you can just try for a year. But, you know, you asked how I sort of keep my head about me. And I think it's just focusing on the work. It's never getting, you know, caught up in the red carpet events or in the, you know, the star meet or any of that stuff. It's really just focusing on the work. And for me, that's where all the excitement and the richness is anyway.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So going back to both of you now, I wanted to talk about your new feature film, Lost Solace. First, Chris, perhaps you could give listeners a short synopsis that doesn't give too much away.
It's the film of a psychopath who, after taking a new brand of ecstasy, goes on a mind-bending trip, which ultimately culminates in him feeling and questioning his morality for the first time.
Right. Yeah, it's an amazing film.
Yes, you were there with us at CineQuest.
Yeah.
We call it a psychological thriller. It is a tough one to place at times, which is actually one of the challenges of the film. And one of the directors of Fright Fest was just talking to us after the screening, and was saying, you know, that he believes there's an audience for this film, despite it sort of having its own unique approach to genre and to narrative storytelling. It's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think often the most interesting art is hard to categorize. And, you know, there is always this sort of push in all areas of the arts from a marketing perspective to try and fit it into some sort of box. But, I mean, rarely does really good art fit in a box, I think.
Well, I mean, we'd like to think so, too. It's an interesting project because for me and for Andrew as well, we were just trying to tell something from the heart and something that was truthful for us and also something that was exciting for us.
Yeah.
You know, I think we got into this to try and make the films that we always wanted to watch. And we love movies that sort of have twists and turns and you don't know where they're going. And, we worked on the screenplay for about 4 years before we felt compelled to move forward with it.
Right.
So it was a real labor of love. And the other thing about story development that I'm a big, you know, I don't think you rush it. I think you find it. I think you let the answer sort of emerge from the woodwork of what's there. And certainly we had a lot of help and a lot of great people looking at it with us who offered advice.
Yeah.
And certainly helped us find it. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is a good way to find the story. I was reading Aaron Sorkin, who's one of my favorite writers, was saying that he's really slow how he works, and he's willing to sit with the process of not knowing what he wants to do. And I think as an artist in all areas of the arts, that's something that you have to be able to tolerate, to wait for that real inspiration and for everything to come together.
I feel him. I actually absolutely agree with him, and I'm guilty as charged. So I've actually one of the things that drives some of my part, including actually Andrew. You know, when's it going to be ready, man?
Yes.
Well, you know, it's I'm waiting for the right idea. It's got to, you know, you have to. I think it depends what your angle is. If your goal is to make a really, you know, if you're aiming to make a great movie that you know, that is something that would really floor you, I think you have to.
Yes.
I think it needs that time. Dara Marx said something in her book, Inside Story, that was really great. And we worked with Linda Seeger, who wrote Making a Good Script, great on this script as well. She's such a great script mentor for me. But Dara talked about letting a story distill, you know, and giving that time to ferment. It's like fine wine.
Yeah.
You know, the more time it kind of has to exist and you get to leave it and then come back to it, the more you find within it, the more you can bring to the surface. Solace is definitely, our film is definitely an example of that process.
Yeah. In Lost Solace, Andrew, you play a character who goes through an incredible emotional journey of extremes. I'm just wondering, how do you go about embodying such a character as truthfully as possible? What was your process with this character?
Well, I think to begin, you know, the relationship that I've had with Chris for quite a long time now, he's one of my closest friends, and I really leaned a lot on him. He was a huge help and helped me work through all of these things, because the real answer is I did everything that I knew how. I mean, I used all the, you know, the things that you learn about in theater school, all the intuitions I had as an actor, every little trick in my bag of tricks, because we shot for 20 days and we went 6 days on, 1 day off. And just about every single day, there was some sort of like hyperbolic emotional, you know, moment. Mm. And it was really, really challenging. It was exhausting. And I remember turning to Chris one day and just saying like, man, I don't know if I've got anything left in me today. And inevitably we'd work through it and we'd find something that worked and we'd move forward. But this one specifically was exhausting.
Mm, yeah. I mean, it's an amazing performance, I have to say. I think you did a tremendous job. And it's a role, I think, that could have really easily been overdrawn, you know. And I think the it's very, very powerful, but it feels really real. So however you found your way there, you took the right path.
I appreciate that. It was, you know, the idea of playing a psychopath was really delicious to me. you know, but then Chris came up with this idea of having this psychopath begin to feel emotions, which added all of this, you know, dynamism to the character that, you know, terrified me. But we really went down a rabbit hole with it. I'm glad that it resonated.
Yes, yeah. There's an element of what I would call magical realism in the film, which blends quite naturally into the story. For example, the lead character that you play, Andrew Spence, sees his newfound emotion in colour and sees paintings moving. I'm wondering what advantages either of you, Chris, maybe you feel this has in storytelling, rather than making a narrative either out-and-out fantasy or completely based in realism?
The movie kind of toes a line with both, I think. It became about, you know, the story is essentially an internal transformation. And how do you depict that when, you know, cinema storytelling is about what you see? And so it had to become an experiential film and getting inside the experience with the character so that you could be on the ride with him. And, you know, the psychedelic stuff was just born out of this need to externalize that internal experience somehow, you know, to take the audience on that trip and have, you know, a blend of maybe metaphor, something that was subtle enough that it wasn't trite, but also effective and something that, you know, moved it along.
Yes.
Made it clear.
Yeah.
It took a while to come out with what that was going to be. I went through a few different manifestations and some awful ideas. I mean, there's a lot in the process that gets dropped. It's amazing.
Yeah. And I can imagine that it could have, you know, some avenues could have turned out a bit cheesy, but it's nothing like that. It works really well. Yeah.
Thank you. You know, we were aware of that. The movie could have fallen into the cheesy land very quickly. And we worked hard. And like Andrew was talking about performance, I also had to come from that very truthful place. And I, like, we all found that as long as we were, you know, owning it, owning what the story was throughout the whole process, including, like, the imagery, it seemed to work better.
Yes, yeah. The cinematography is impressive. It's filmed with beautiful, rich colors, and it evokes the different scenes quite arrestingly and uniquely. I mean, apart from the elements of how to show his emotion, how did you, or what was behind, you know, the visualization of the story, how you imagined telling this story?
Well, the script is very visual. And again, I mean, I'll say it out right now that having Thomas Billingsley as your director of photography certainly makes it easier. Mm-hmm. We'd worked together before. We had a bit of a history, and bringing him in on this was a big deal because it was our passion project. We needed the right guy. We needed to know we were in the right hands. Thomas and I spent about 2 months with the screenplay in his basement, poring over nothing but the look and looking at films and paintings and all the different sources. But we found that the best inspiration actually, like, he found it within the screenplay. And there was a painting, an abstract painting that was sort of a derivative of surrealism and something very dark that was, like, it was labeled as being a painting that was done out of depression. And there was a color scheme there that we sort of studied, and we got into those colors and the meaning behind them and the way they made us feel, and we started just painting with light from there. Also, the story has an ongoing theme, and again, it was in the script. I just wrote it subconsciously, but Thomas kind of took it for face value. The character is constantly, as a psychopath, using reflections as a weapon, and then as he transforms, he sort of begins to reflect on himself, you know? And in the script, there was a lot of reflected and refracted light written, and Thomas made these mirror contraptions that he started bouncing light off of, and it gave it this really, like, this whole extra thematic quality that, honestly, on day one, he started doing it, and I was like, dude, that is so in line with all the nuances of the story. You just kind of tied a bow on it, and it was magic. And having a great team. I mean, everybody involved with us on this movie really pulled through. Like, we were amazed at who we were able to get and what they came out with.
Yeah. The story is obviously really powerful about a sociopath who starts to feel. But I also experienced the film on a sort of higher level as a metaphor for how society is leaning with the progression of the digital world and the march of individualism. Our interaction with the world is in danger of becoming more shallow and self-serving. I wondered what deeper meanings you may have had in mind when conceiving the film, if indeed you did.
I mean, the project was born out of Andrew and I having a fascination with psychopathy. I mean, it's interesting when he came in after that audition, how he felt feeling no remorse and just being able to do whatever he wants and being flippant. And then I was talking about how that almost predisposes you for success in this society and how unfortunate that is. And we would have long-winded conversations about that late into the night.
Yeah.
And that was exactly what the whole premise was born out of, was wanting to make a movie that maybe we can cast a light on this and begin a conversation, because it is unfortunate. And the film ultimately, for me, I made the movie because I wanted to make a film about empathy, just exploring it and all the things that we were just talking about with society.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. My special guest this week, film director, producer and writer Chris Shorman, and award-winning actor and producer Andrew Jenkins. We're going to go to some messages now, but we'll be back with more conversation. Keep it here.
Like the
to music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
About you in the rain. Did I or didn't I say it's forever? Well, I know I said it, baby, it just goes nowhere.
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com. Gazing at a painting by Santa Cruz artist Doreen Davis simultaneously enlivens and soothes the soul. Working predominantly in watercolor, but also in acrylic and oil, Doreen's floral and landscape paintings have appeared in many exhibitions and are in private collections in the United States, the United Kingdom, and Germany. Experience the visual delight of being at one with nature through her paintings. Visit her online gallery at DoreenDavis.com. DoreenDavis.com. That's DoreenDavis.com.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copeland, and my guest from the arts this week, director, producer and writer Chris Shawman, and award-winning actor and producer Andrew Jenkins, whose latest project together is the feature film Lost Solace. And if you're interested in getting some information about that, getting a glimpse of the trailer, etc., you can go to the website lostsolacefilm.com. I'm very interested in a psychologist called Alice Miller, and she writes at length about how art can help people process difficult events and whether these are events that they've experienced themselves or events that they've witnessed. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on whether art can have a healing effect on those making art and those experiencing it. Maybe you, Andrew, first, your thoughts.
Well, I think especially as it relates to our film, art can help people feel empathy, you know, experiences that we haven't had ourselves, but that we can try to understand in other people if we can see them through any medium. You know, speaking as an actor, some days after, you know, a day at work, it can be cathartic. Some day it's not. Some day it feels icky and it's really hard work. So I think as a performer or as an audience, there's definitely catharsis and definitely an element of empathy there. And that's what really, I mean, that's what keeps me interested in it.
Right. Yeah. What about you, Chris? Do you see a healing effect for art?
I think I can speak to, yes, I do. And I think I can speak to Lost Solace specifically. In that, for me, I did have a debilitating panic disorder years ago. And the therapy I had to go through over the 2 years and the post-traumatic stress techniques I had to learn, the mindfulness, meditation. I was a different person by the end of that process. And Solace was re-entering some of those waters and a way to kind of tie a bow on the experience. Like, it was evidence to me that that had happened, and I can reflect on that now, and I can move forward with my life. And it was terrifying. There were some times where I'd be writing or reading the script back, or even while cutting or shooting, where it was, whew, yeah, this feels like it did when I was lost in that. And certainly in the film, with technique, we tried to, you know, create the paranoia seizures much like they were to myself when that was going on. So for me, that process was very healing and a chance to sort of face it like a nightmare and get through it. So
Yes. And what you were talking about, Andrew, also of empathy, I mean, being able to put yourself in the positions of these characters, even one that's unsavory, you know, with no emotions at all, it does give you that opportunity vicariously to experience what that would be like and then to move into this full feeling experience. Yeah.
It does, and that's one of the great side effects of being an actor or really any kind of performer, because you really get to, you know, depending on your method, you get to dig in and try to step into somebody else's shoes. Again, depending on what kind of performer you are or what your jam is, but yeah.
Yeah, and what you were talking about, Chris, I think to me the best art often is the most intensely personal art. However, it's essential that you transcend your own personal story to find greater meaning, or you don't create art. You know, you're just sharing your life. And I think, you know, obviously the way this film has gone, you've definitely managed to do that. I'm wondering how much both of you are conscious of how much of yourselves you put into your work and how you use that to enrich what you do rather than kind of interfere with what you're doing.
Yeah, I definitely try to put as much of myself in it as possible within reason. I've never been a psychopath, but certainly have, you know, changed as a human and experienced a very psychedelic experience almost. And yes, I think the more personal it is, the more it resonates. And I test that by sharing the work with other people. And if they're feeling it, not just witnessing it, but feeling it with you, I think, you know, you're striking a nerve. I also, you know, found a lot of, like my way into that process by training with our producer, Lori Triolo, in the Meisner technique, which, you know, it is about getting into the moment and being under the truthful circumstances. But she also, you know, as we sort of discovered, the more personal you can get somehow, it's a way in, you know?
Yeah. Mainstream film has a huge pressure to be commercially viable as entertainment. And so there is a temptation either to follow worn paths or resort to perceived crowd pleasers, you know, sex, violence, sensationalism, and to make art take a back seat. At the same time, some unique, thoughtful films have done well. It seems there is a market for films that deal with deeper aspects of experience. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the direction of film as art. Andrew, do you have a thought? Or Chris?
It's
a deep question, I know.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, we love, you know, the odd blockbuster, but, you know, I think that we crave, as we think that there's an audience out there that's maybe a little more deprived right now than they have been in the past, where they crave a movie and film and stories that sort of strike deeper notes, that are more resonant, that are maybe a little more personal on behalf of the filmmakers. They're just a little more full, and certainly that's the reason why we made this film, was because we want to we want to make that stuff. We're inspired by it. It's changed our lives. We almost want to give back with our work, if we can. I mean, that's what you try to do. Yes. Whether or not it happens is kind of out of your hands.
Yeah.
But I think to at least aim for it is the starting point. So we hope to do our part, and whatever that turns into, that's what it'll turn into.
Yeah. You're basically, both of you, making your dream happen through hard work and self-funding at various points. A lot of people aspire to goals that somehow they don't ever seem able to reach. I'm wondering what it is in you or your backgrounds that you think has given you the motivation to keep pushing on through all the challenges, because I mean it really isn't easy to work professionally in the arts, and I think especially in film.
Well, I think that both of us have stories in this that we really want to tell. I know that in my life I've had a good amount of nourishment, and I've been told, you know, that I could go off and pursue things. But I think Chris and I both come from we have a quite a work ethic, and that probably has led to, you know, there's been times, especially through this process, where there have been so many roadblocks, and we kind of looked at each other and I don't know, we managed to, you know, jump from one hurdle to the next, but there were times where it seemed impossible. And I'm starting to learn that it may kind of always be that way, and yet you have to keep trucking on.
Yes, yeah.
I feel like for me, we sought out a lot of mentorship, and we had, you know, some of the best people we could get. Lori, one of them. Tom Cox was another one. There's Linda Seeger. I mean, these were people that you know, are very prominent in the industry in their respective fields, and we sought them out because they've done it, they know it, we wanted to learn from the best, and we were fortunate that they were responsive to us. So I think I remember Steve Jobs saying, you have to ask for help, you just have to ask. And amazingly, a lot of people are willing to take a look to see if they can help.
Right.
And for us, that was a big thing, and the film is a product of, you know, yes, a lot of people told us that what we were trying to do was impossible, but we just kind of put our head down and we just started taking one step at a time and doing it anyway. And it just, like, if we knew what it would take from the get-go, if we could see the whole, let's say we're climbing a mountain, if we could see the whole mountain from the get-go, we probably wouldn't have climbed it. But
yeah.
In the long run, as we've seen what's come together simply by taking one small step at a time, it sort of resulted where we're going now. And the film is getting distribution. We were getting festivals. We've got the Whistler Film Festival in Canada as our Canadian premiere in December. We will be getting a limited theatrical in Canada. We can't release the details yet. But, like, our film is, we're very fortunate to be seeing the traction, but none of it would be happening if we had, you know, let fear sort of lead us astray.
Yes, yeah. I think the whole thing of, it sounds like a truism to say, you know, one step after the other, but I think that is really true, and so often we don't do that. You know, you're just looking at the goal and it seems so far away, it's almost like, well, I can just never get there. But if you look at all the steps, then suddenly, you know, you're a lot closer. Yeah.
Just do the next right thing. That's it.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
Forget the rest.
I was going to ask you, you were talking a little bit about where Lost Solace is going, how listeners can keep informed as to when, you know, they might be able to see the film, what's happening with the film. Is the best thing to go to the website I mentioned, lostsolacefilm.com?
Yeah, the website, we're constantly updating our social media. I'm at Sherman Chris on Instagram and Twitter, and Andrew's also on there. And by all means, we're going to be updating as we go. And certainly we'll be linking it to the distributor sites and screenings and more festivals and wherever the film will be attainable.
Right, yeah. Well, it's a fabulous film in so many ways. It was, I know... I was not wanting to see it because I was thinking, I don't think I want to see a film about a psychopath. And I'm so glad that you convinced me at the world premiere to go, because it was riveting. It was so beautifully shot and the script and the characters, just everything. It's a tremendously evocative and moving film. So
thank you very much.
Looking forward to it having a wider release. We're nearly at the end of the show, so I just wanted to ask you quickly whether there's an overarching message or theme you're trying to explore through all your films, or whether each one is a separate entity, or is there something that you really want to push through your films?
For me, I'm I think you become more aware as you go. I'm finding that I'm trying to find humanity in very dark places, and that nothing is ever as black and white as you think, and that there is actually hope and light where things appear very dark.
Right.
And, you know, that seems to be a thing that keeps arriving in my stories anyway.
Yes, yeah.
But things maybe aren't what they seem.
Well, often it would be nice that they aren't. So it's good that you're exploring that and getting us to have a window on that. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Andrew, for your time and sharing your experience.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Ruth. Absolutely. Yeah.
And thanks so much to you too, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I just want to remind you again about the website lostsolacefilm.com, and there is a very extended trailer on that site, so you can really get an idea of what the film is about, and I really, really can recommend it. And also just wanted to give you the show's website again. It's aquestionofbalance.com. You'll be able to hear this show here. If you've enjoyed this interview, tell people about the podcast. And we've also had some wonderful guests previously and other topics, so I encourage you to check that out. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.